Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a former engineer and analytics consultant turned brilliant entrepreneur building an innovative company in a traditionally slow-moving industry. She's the founder of Suchi Inc., a design and manufacturing partner for the most innovative, forward-thinking American fashion and apparel brands and Fortune 1000 companies. In addition to this, Suchi Inc. is proudly making everything in the USA and is women-owned, and the fast-growing team of over 100 is now 70% women-operated. Now, let's hack Suchi Ramesh. No matter what industry you are in, business is about communication. Whether you're communicating with customers, clients, partners, or team members, and to do this properly, you need Vast Conference. Vast Conference was founded in 2008 with one mission. They want to make conference calling easy and reliable. They've been a leader in the conference calling industry ever since, and in 2017, they supported over 1 billion minutes of conference calls. From instant conference calling to single-click start and join calls from mobile, they have operator-assisted calls you can use or screen sharing that will allow you to present, demonstrate, and collaborate with the people near and far using their best-in-class screen sharing service and their global network. To get a 30-day free trial with Vast Conference for the best conference calling service in the business, visit conferencecalling.com/trial offer. Or if you like to use the phone, you could call 1-888-498-9240 and mention Hack the Entrepreneur to one of the sales team. Once again, go to conferencecalling.com/trial offer. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Suchi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Let's do
looking
it,
forward.
We?
It.
Excellent.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
All right, Suchi. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think not giving up. I'm not sure if it allowed to cuss on the show, but
sure, of
with a fast-growing startup, you just think, oh my God, we'll fuck so many days. And then ours is a high-growth startup. So I think just not giving up and keeping the faith and seeing the long-term vision, I suppose that's what's helped me the most.
Has that been something that you've only adopted since starting Suchi, or is this something that's kind of weaved through your life?
Well, I think any entrepreneur would probably say you develop a muscle for just staying through. And that muscle is just so much better developed once you start a company. I would say, obviously, I feel like I had that going in a little bit, but I definitely am a better person and a stronger person because of the challenges and in over just staying through it and fighting it. And then there's another big challenge. So I'd say I was always persistent, but just ever so much more since Suchi Inc.
So you're telling me there's just like these hurdles to overcome every single day?
Yeah, I'm sure it's not just me. Every entrepreneur, there's just new hurdles and you feel like you pass some and the company grows and then there's a whole new shitstorm. But that's the fun of it too, right?
Yeah, it's trying to, like, especially with the growth you're going through, just as the founder, as the CEO, staying ahead of that company must be really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's just every business has its own set of challenges. It's also unique. I think for me, for the good or bad, I don't have co-founders, but what I have is just a fantastic team and a very age-diverse and a skill-diverse team. So I think having them around has really helped combat a lot of the challenges. So, and fast growth is just glamorous on the outside. It presents unique questions to answer every day. So yeah, I mean, having a great team really helps.
Right, right. And I do want to get into sort of the nitty-gritty of Suchi, but I would like to kind of go back a bit if we could, because from my research, it looks like you spent about 10 years working through various companies in sales, in, I think, consulting. Could you tell me exactly where you came from?
Yeah, for sure. So I was born and raised in India in the South. I was fortunate to be in tech jobs that had me travel around, live and travel in different countries. So I'm actually a computer science engineer, and then I did my MBA in IT and marketing. So I began my career coding in C++ and Java, of all things. And then I went on to play, to have roles in technology companies. So I was in Intel as a part of the supply chain analytics team. And then most recently, I was a part of two analytics startups, both of which went on to become unicorns, and so really fast scale. And I was in account management sales roles at each. So it's a combination of technology, eventually selling technology, and then understanding the data and building really cool predictive solutions out of that. So that's what I was doing before. And then I decided to do a paddle manufacturing. You know, it seems really disconnected from the face of it, but it's really not. My passion is not, I don't see myself as a designer of fashion. That's not what pumps me up. But however, if you look at the apparel fashion industry, it's very fragmented in the U.S. First of all, it's been dead in the U.S. for a very long time. And there's been lack of processes, but this is really the last leg that has not been optimized for technology. If you look at the front end or e-commerce or, and just really fashion, it's been completely transformed by the use of tech, right? But if you look at manufacturing, it's kind of an anachronism. It's still like 100 years in the past, especially in the U.S. So the challenge for us and the opportunity was just really, how do we build an efficient, very communicative process and then apply a proprietary technology over it to scale an analog industry with tech? So the way it's been done with taxis or real estate, for example. So yeah, that's my background, and that's how it kind of applies to, you know, what we do today. But that's what I did before Suchi Inc.
Okay, so, but like, where does this idea sort of come from? Like, did you just see this somehow in your other jobs, this idea with apparel? Because we all kind of know that apparel moved to China, and that's where it's done.
Yeah.
And you saw this problem, and you're working to solve it, and then you're also working to solve it in New Jersey, which is a long ways away from, I'm assuming you weren't in New Jersey at the time, or were you?
No, so there's a few questions there, right? And no, when I began the company or what the idea was, I didn't envision that it would be this. Initially, the goal was to, I'm a tiny woman, I'm 5'2.5", I'm a very small frame. And in being customer facing and conversing with Fortune 500 decision makers, I'd always, you know, I had to take care to be well presented in tailored clothes and having something off the shelf, but that was, things wouldn't fit me. And I wanted to look professional, but at the same time wanted it to be young and stylish. And so I would get things custom made, and having lived and traveled in Asian countries, it was easier to get things tailor made and not have to spend a huge amount on it. So the initial goal with starting Suchi Inc. is, how do we use data and a vertically integrated supply chain to take measurements online and build a custom piece and ship it in less than 5 days? So speed to market, do it all in-house, because you can't be fast if you don't do it in-house, and each piece was to be custom. However, 6 months in, we built a great supply chain. We built a technology layer to take data in and use 3D models to represent how a piece would look on a body. However, where we bombed was the consumer marketing side of things, because as I admittedly said at the start of the call, I'm not, you know, my passion is not in fashion or consumer. And so we said, well, that's the part that we're not doing well, which is the consumer marketing. But what we have done well is the supply chain, the process, and the tech. Why don't we pivot and make it B2B? So essentially what we were doing for our own brand, we started offering that to large and small companies. And things really just took off, right? It's not that manufacturing is a new thing. It's been done for years and decades. It's just that we were doing it in such a radically different way. We were doing it in the U.S. We were doing it faster. We were doing it more efficiently because of using tech. And now with our own proprietary tech, we're also building communication and real-time transparency. So we took a traditional industry and just started doing it in a very different way. And I think that's how it really evolved. So it didn't start this way. It just became something else. And I'm sure a lot of other startups go through the same evolution, if you would. And Jersey, yeah, I mean, it just, the idea was always to be local because we wanted to be fast. Even at the beginning, when we started off being consumer, the goal was always, how could we be super fast and give somebody what they want within a couple of days? So that's just into it. I mean, you can't, there was never the idea to go out, because if you want control of the supply chain and you want to build a seamless process, it's just, you can't have a supply chain that's halfway across the world.
Absolutely. When you made this pivot, and the pivot makes sense to go to B2B,
yeah.
Did you find that you had to convince people to listen to you, like, as an American company that was manufacturing locally?
Yeah, I mean, we still come upon that challenge. I think some parts were easy and some parts, you know, when we did the B2B, it's just when you find your market product fit, we knew it. Because as soon as we did that and we started running our B2B campaigns, we went from, I mean, when we started in 2015 with the consumer focus, we had this great idea, this great tech, wonderful product, but I think the sales weren't coming in and something was flawed, because I think that's where you need to know that you're passionate about who you're selling to and knowing the market. But once we, so that part we got right when we did the B2B, because I knew about selling to B2B, A-B testing, building out the inside sales process. So in my past life, I was selling software as a service. So we applied pretty much the same software as a service model to our selling. So that part we got right, I think, and we did differently. But what's still a challenge is the pricing to some extent. And we execute the service in a very different way. So a lot of it is also the education. So it's almost much easier to work with someone who's a millennial founder or a brand owner or a really young or a really established brand too that's been used to making in the USA. So it's a little easier to have that conversation with them versus someone that has started working in China and is having issues and desperately wants to come back. But having them get used to the different model, I suppose, is where the education is. The funny thing is the education isn't really about the price, because they're very close. We're actually, if you compare the landed costs, we're only about 20% more expensive at face value. And then over time, there's so much gain in lifetime value and in quality and being able to build long-term conversation with your end consumer. I think it's just, I think people don't expect that it can happen here, right? So that's where the education is.
Yeah, that's probably exactly it. It's just people assume that it can't happen here, but then as you sort of educate them through the sales process, and you touched on this sales process, I mean, you're selling apparel B2B like a SaaS product.
Yeah.
Kind of go a bit deeper into that, what that looks like?
Yeah, sure. I mean, some of it I feel is something we're doing unique. So without going into too much detail, only about 40% of our revenue comes from cut and sew, which is traditionally what you call quote unquote manufacturing. And by the nature of it, that's lower margin. And we consciously want to be very, very aggressive in how we price, because it's the same philosophy, right? We pay to acquire the customer and we see that there would be long-term lifetime value. And we want to make Made in USA accessible, which all boils down to the fact that you have to make the actual manufacturing of the garment affordable for someone that wants to make it in the USA. However, about 60% of our revenue comes from services, which is sourcing services, design services, project management services, and the technology that we build. So we have a proprietary tech layer that communicates with the physical shop floor and is providing real-time updates to our businesses and then their end consumers. So we're still updating and upgrading the hardware. And once the hardware is completely on every machine, the goal is to make that communicate through Wi-Fi directly with the database in the front end. So it's really instant in real time. For now, some amount of it is still manually updated, but from the front end, it's agnostic because the front end consumer doesn't care how you're updating it because they still see the same updates. So our goal over time is not just to create, you know, to create the product, but how do you allow, I mean, today the problem is that as a business, if you have a consumer that wants a product, the industry is shifting to made to order to a big extent, right? Where you, even the bigger brands want to make in smaller batches and want to have the making guided by more intelligent forecasts or even when the order comes in. So instead of just telling them, hey, it's going to be 3 weeks to get your product, if your consumer can have a login to your shop floor and see a minute by minute update of what's happening in the 3 weeks, then they're not going to be frustrated with waiting those 3 weeks. So with the software as a service model, our goal is to really monetize that transparency, and we've been starting to build for that, as well as the other design services. So that's really how it works.
Wow. And is there like a specific category that you are focusing on most? Like, is it women's apparel? Is it men's apparel? Children's?
We do all three. We've consciously stayed away from being a single category company because our goal is to scale fast. And that's where the technology comes in, where we're not just able to connect our mothership or the headquarters, but we want to also connect a lot of sister factories that work with us in Jersey and New York that have been factories that have been around 30, 40 years and don't understand even basics communication, leave alone technology, right? So there's a lot of scale as the ability to scale by connecting all of these guys. We want to stay in multiple categories because we see too that that's how we could scale. I mean, there's a method to the madness. It's not like we began on day one and started making coats and jackets as well as silk dresses. However, we've invested in different kinds of machines and people, and we train people. We have a Sitchi University that trains a lot of women, and we've added about 100 certifications in the local community. So yeah, we do men, women, kids. We do a huge variety of fabrics, and consciously so, but we stagger out. I mean, our goal is every month we add a new category. Like next month we want to add leather bags, and we've invested in a lot of machines for that. So we have a planned approach to how we expand. But right now, a ton of men, women, kids across a huge variety of fabrics.
And when you say consciously, you've decided not to just pick one category to stick in.
Yeah.
Consciously, to me, really stands out with you and with what you're building with Sitchi. Because, I mean, consciously choosing to do everything, all the work in the U.S., doing it in Jersey.
Yeah.
And now also the fact that you are owner and operated by women, and like 70%, I believe, of your team is also made up of women.
Yes.
I'm assuming this is conscious.
Yes, it is. It's conscious, and some of it has also been by design to not take all the credit. You know, what I mean by that is the women aspect of it, not many people know it, but the area we're in, the county, I mean, New Jersey is the embroidery capital of the world too. So there's been a huge base of talent here, but that's been rusty talent because jobs have gone away. And so early on, we used to have a lot of women walk through the doors when we were hiring that said, hey, I learned sewing 20 years ago. I have a sewing machine at home, or I had a job and then I lost it. So, you know, these were a lot of women because that industry at that time employed a lot of women. So we had to invest in training them, and we saw an opportunity, but they were not ready to be plugged into projects as soon as they walked through the door. So that was part of it, right? We wanted to leverage the talent that the industry had years ago, and a lot of them tended to be women. But yeah, also the other part of us being consciously staying in Jersey, we're not competing with Bangladesh or China on 100,000 pieces and a super low, crazy, you know, rate. That's not going to work here, right? The goal is to be affordable, and I think for U.S. standards, we're extremely aggressive on prices. But at the same time, we're very clear that we're not competing with China. Our business model is different. We're catering to the future of fashion. We're fast. We're effective. We use technology, and that's how we scale. And you know, for our businesses, what we are is this quick, fast-to-market, very efficient answer to consumers' wearing needs that may be, at the face of it, maybe about 20% more expensive than China, but that gives you a better opportunity to build long-term loyalty with consumers.
Now, before we get too far, and I mean, this is really fitting because this discussion is taking place again on the factory floor with Sitchi in a factory that she's created out of nothing, out of an idea, something she wanted to accomplish, which is exactly how Fiverr came to be started. Simply the creation of something out of nothing, or as we call it, an entrepreneurial idea. In fact, Fiverr is how I built the first website for Hack the Entrepreneur. I got the first logo. I got the first intro music and the introduction, the guy speaking at the very beginning of the show that you still hear, 100% from Fiverr. And still, not a week goes by that I don't use Fiverr, either in my business or for one of my clients. You can now join the already millions of entrepreneurs who have built their businesses using Fiverr. And it's easy. Visit Fiverr. fiverr.com/HTE. That's fiverr.com/HTE. And if you use promo code HTE20, you get 20% off your very first Fiverr purchase. Go there now, explore their marketplace of over 150 categories, and get inspired to stop dreaming and start doing. Once again, that's fiverr.com/HTE. All right, let's get back to the show. In there, you said finding opportunities that can be plugged into projects. So this is a great place to segue into projects. I would like to know, Suchi, as the leader of this company that's growing really quickly and rapidly and sort of entering into new markets, projects as a loose term, what is it? What's the process you guys are going through yourself or as a team to decide when you see these opportunities of a project and that that project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
So that's a, I mean, there's many, many ways to answer that question. So a lot of that boils down to what your sales strategy is, right? And I think that's another thing that we've done differently is the only type of selling I knew was the selling I did in tech, setting up an inside sales process and then selling. So for the good or bad, I just applied a very similar model here, defined target customers, evolved that based on what we knew of the market here. We've consciously hedged our risks to be in three different sectors. So we cater to a lot of uniforms, not the traditional black and white uniforms you might imagine, but a lot of the unique custom uniforms that the specialized industries like theme parks, casinos, cruise lines would need. So that's one area. And those tend to be larger companies, Fortune 1000, most of them. And then we have very large names in fashion. We can't take names, but, the bigger brands and men, women, and kids. And then we also are in the emerging fashion space where the companies may be smaller, the purchase order values may be a little smaller. However, they're innovating. They're very friendly to the user tech. They see that's where they're the ones that have very high adoption rates for our proprietary technology, for example. So we see different pluses and minuses with each type of customer. And at the high level, we've differentiated them into three tiers. And so we have different pricing models for each, right? So understanding that with the emerging fashion customers, it takes them some time to build continuity. They experiment a lot. They need more services from us than they do need the cut and sew because their volumes are not so high. So typically, the margins there tend to be higher. However, the purchase order values tend to be lower. So it's a high margin, relatively lower revenue game, whereas with the other two sectors, it could be the opposite, not always. So I think how we decide, one thing we did right at the beginning is we had a very good, well-thought-out sales strategy. We have a very aggressive team in a good way. And I think we've defined what kind of customer we're going for in those sectors and have priced accordingly.
So you have these three sectors. Are you consistently like looking for new sectors, or is it just more ways to go deeper into these ones?
For now, it's deeper into these ones. I think there's ways to expand, of course, but I think there's plenty to do in these three for now. Go deep. And then also our focus is that horizontal tech layer across these as well, which is our proprietary grid. So for now, these three, at least in the short and medium term.
Excellent. Well, Suchi, this has been a lot of fun. I would love to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
As an entrepreneur yourself, at the forefront of this company that's growing really, really quickly, I tend to see that we often have always projecting our successes into the future.
Yeah.
So when you hit that revenue goal in 1 month or 6 months or a year, whatever it happens to be, that's when you think you'll see yourself as successful, yet you'll probably set bigger, loftier goals into the future at that moment. So we are always pushing forward, but I would love it if you could stop right now, stop looking forward and turn and look behind you at this whole journey of building this company and tell me how you feel about everything you've accomplished up till today.
I mean, I feel I'm incredibly proud, but I think it's a team effort. What I'm most proud of is it's just what we've built. I mean, it's a great team and everything we've put together. We're so far we're bootstrapped and self-funded. So we didn't start off with Ivy League resumes. We all joke about it because we're just a bunch of scrappers, if you would, in a good way. And there's a TED talk on this too. But I think, you know, we're all a set of scrappers that have just come together to be successful, and we're all just really proud of one another.
Wow. I actually didn't even look into it or ask, and I would have assumed the way you're growing that you were like VC funded. It's amazing.
No, not yet. I mean, we just started pitching now because of how fast we've scaled and our goals going into next year. It's inevitable now. So we just started a roadshow very recently, but up until this point, there is no outside funding. It's just, it's all skin and bones, just me.
I love it. A bunch of scrappers. It's a great way to talk about yourself and your team.
We hold that title proudly.
Yeah. And you really do make sure to focus that it's a team effort. It's not you doing all of this at all.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, we're almost 100 people now. It's just impossible to have done this without a fantastic team.
So we've got to talk about Suchi throughout all of this. Suchi Inc., I guess that is. And could you just now specifically tell the listener what Suchi does, who it's for, and where they can track you guys down online?
Yeah. So Suchi is a vertically integrated factory of the future. So, and, you know, we cater to big businesses and also make dreams come true for younger brands. And you can find us at suchi.com, S-U-U-C-H-I with two U's, .com. And there's plenty of information online. So just type in Suchi and you'll see a bunch of ways to reach us.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you again so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. And just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome to watch.
And thank you so much, John. Thanks for making the time. And good luck with everything.
Suchi, thank you so much for taking the time. I have to admit, in 400 episodes, it's the first time I've ever spoken to somebody from the factory floor. That was fun. I like it. It was unique. And so we also now are approaching the point in the show where we have to go back. And we have to go back and not only find the thing that Suchi said, we have to find the thing that she said from the factory floor. This is my favorite part. You ready? All right, let's do it. Let's go back. Let's find the hack.
This is really the last leg that has not been optimized for technology. If you look at the front end or e-commerce or and just really fashion, it's been completely transformed by the use of tech, right? But if you look at manufacturing, it's kind of an anachronism. It's still like 100 years in the past, especially in the U.S. So the challenge for us and the opportunity was just really how do we build an efficient, very communicative process and then apply a proprietary technology over it to scale an analog industry with tech. So the way it's been done with taxis or real estate, for example.
And that's the hack. Suchi, Suchi, Suchi. I love this. I love this because of the scale and the magnitude of the way you are tackling and accomplishing this. But I love it for you also out there, the listener, because although it seems like Suchi is creating something absolutely from scratch or reinventing sort of some sort of wheel, she isn't. And she just admitted that. And this is the way this thinking needs to work. She's found an industry that she's worked in that she realizes has a lack of technology and hasn't been pushed forth the way, say, taxis has been, she says, or renting apartments. Like this idea of putting technology to the apparel industry and using it to, or seeing it, I guess she said, as she sees it as the challenge, but really it's not just a challenge, it's actually an opportunity. So you probably work in an industry right now that has sectors of it that are still absolutely lagging behind with technology. There's places where things could be optimized. There's places in every industry where we've been doing things for so long that we just kind of keep doing them that way, but we never stop to think about the problems and the trouble of the people who have to actually do this day in and day out. So either you work in this as a job for another company or an industry, maybe in healthcare, maybe in real estate. There are so many places where things can be optimized, and these are not the challenges. These, in fact, are your opportunities. These are your opportunities to solve these challenges and turn them into businesses. This is the kind of thinking it takes to get from, as Suchi did, to get from being the consultant and the engineer to moving into being an absolutely successful entrepreneur, scaling a business by solving a problem. Suchi, thank you so very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I thank you so much for stopping by. I thank you so much for just spending the time. If you're on an Apple device, I would love a rating and review right now, or whatever you happen to be listening to this show on. If you are on an Apple device, you can go hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes. And then if you're on Spotify, I think there's ways to follow things and rate things. I don't know. I'm just excited we're on Spotify. So I think that's pretty cool. So make sure to head over to the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com, and get onto the email list. Plus, check out Suchi's show notes for everything we talked about today. I will link to it, including her business, some articles written about her, as well as some social media, so you can track her down if you want to. If you want to follow up with her and ask her any more questions, I'm sure she would love to help you in any way that she can. It's been fun. I appreciate it so much, you stopping by. Yeah, just until next time. Please keep hacking the entrepreneur.